Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop. For January 30th, I'm Alan Chartok. President Trump is set to deliver his first State of the Union address tonight at 9 o'clock. You can listen to the speech live on WAMC, WAMC.org, and on the WAMC mobile app. Here to discuss what the Republicans may cover are Professor Bruce Miroff of the Rockefeller College for Public Affairs and Policy and Professor Jack Collins of Siena College. And we want to hear from you, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your calls, much more, all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello, once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. President Trump is set to deliver his first State of the Union address tonight at 9 o'clock. You can listen to the speech live on WAMC, WAMC.org, and the WAMC mobile app. Here to discuss what the Republican may touch on are Professors Bruce Miroff of the Rockefeller College for Public Affairs and Policy and Professor Jack Collins of Siena College. What do you think President Trump will say during the primetime speech? 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Get in early, folks, because there's going to be a lot of people on the phones. You can also post comments at facebook.com/WAMC radio. But the best way to do it is email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Well, gentlemen, I'm so glad that you could join us. Bruce Miroff, you've written on the presidency and on Trump, yes?
Yes, I have.
Tell us what your expectations are.
Well, first, let me preface it. I think the State of the Union is not what it used to be. In what is called the golden age of presidential television, there was a massive audience when people couldn't watch much else. And most people tuned in. Today, we know audiences have shrunk because of partly technology and partly partisan polarization, that people have many other things to watch, and furthermore, that people now tune in or not depending on partisanship, that the audience is going to be more Republican than Democratic, particularly with Trump, since a lot of Democrats can't quite stomach the idea of an hour of Donald Trump.
That's right. Jack, what do you got?
You know, I certainly think it's worth echoing what Bruce said, that, you know, audiences have shrunk. People aren't as interested in paying this close attention to someone with whom they oftentimes violently disagree. And so I think that, you know, what he ends up saying and the effect that he ends up having will largely be colored by people's own partisanship. And, you know, the way that people react to it will largely be driven by their own partisanship.
So there are a number of things that we should touch on very quickly. One of them is that there's a common wisdom that this president plays to his base, and he doesn't deviate from the base, and he needs them, and he won't do that. He's also got the lowest approval rating in the history of the American presidency since we started measuring this thing. And there are those, and he also has Bob Mueller on his tail. And there are those people who think that his big issue now is that if he got more people liking him, maybe Mueller would, you know, be in a different situation vis-a-vis him than otherwise. So we're looking to see whether he stays on script, whether he starts yelling back at anybody in his audience and saying beat him up or any of that stuff, which he has done in the past. What do you guys expect to see happen, Bruce?
I think there's a lot of paradoxes happening today. On the one hand, the advance notice is that he's going to try to be more conciliatory, that he's going to try to overcome his image as a divisive figure. On the other hand, to the extent that he talks about his agenda, a large part of that is alienating to the opposition, particularly his demands on immigration, the kind of payoff he's asking in order to protect the Dreamers. So we're going to see a tension between the idea of moving beyond his base to the extent that he can do so at the same time his agenda is largely pitched to his base. Furthermore, I expect a lot of boasting.
Yeah, I guess. And among the boasts will be the economy, right?
Yeah, but it's a funny day. I mean, his biggest boast all along has been the stock market booming. And he's giving the address on a day when the stock market is suffering its largest fall in almost 2 years. And when there are rumblings that the bull market may be about to end. So I'm curious to see how much he boasts about the stock market as he has since he came into office on a day like this.
Jack Collins?
Yeah, I think continuing on the trend of the economy, I think he's going to continue to boast both about the stock market and about unemployment. One of the things that his administration's tried to do over the past couple of weeks is highlight the historically low black unemployment rate. And so I think he might continue to harp on that a little bit during the speech. I think as well he's sort of in a precarious position where he is often on script, on message in these nationally televised speeches. And then, he gets off and goes back on Twitter and starts blasting somebody. So I think we can kind of expect some of that to happen as well. As Bruce said, he might be more conciliatory during the speech. But the real question comes, what happens after the speech?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your show, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Howard in New Paltz. Howard, you're on.
Hey, how are you? I'm very puzzled by every time a president, especially him, gives a speech, do people realize that it's not him, it's the speechwriter? The speechwriter should be on stage where he is. Because why do people believe that? What a great speech he gave. What a great... It's not even him.
Well, I think each of us will have an answer for you. Bruce, you want to go first?
With some presidents, speechwriters try to capture the voice and the ideas. I think that was true with a president who was quite able to give his own speeches and write, like Barack Obama. With Donald Trump, we know that because we've seen him off script, that he does not speak when he's on his own, like he speaks when he's reading a script. So the caller's comment may be particularly apt in President Trump's case.
Okay, and Jack Collins?
Yeah, so I think that Trump is well known for going kind of off the cuff and being in his extemporaneous speaking style. He's a lot more combative, a lot more divisive, and a lot less formal. And you can certainly tell that it's a speechwriter when, for instance, at his inaugural address, that was very clearly someone who wrote that for him. And I think most people were aware of the office of speechwriter. But, to the extent that Trump might come off as appearing presidential, I think, Democrats are going to say, oh, that's just the speechwriters. And Republicans are going to say, no, that's really Donald Trump.
Well, aren't the Republicans right? I'm sorry about this because, as you know, I'm not exactly a Trump supporter. But he's the president of the United States. He chooses the people who work for him. He chooses the people who will say the words for him or write the words for him. He has, in the end, the buck stops with him. Yes, Howard? Maybe not. Okay, Bruce?
There's also a couple other things about speechwriters. First of all, how closely does a president look over the draft, edit the draft, in some sense make the speech more their own after the speechwriters?
We know FDR and JFK were famous for that.
Right, and we don't have any indication that President Trump does that. Secondly, how is the speech delivered? President Trump, from the few formal occasions we've seen him since he took office, is very a kind of rote speaker. There's very little inflection. There's very little emotion. He almost looks like he's never seen the words before. He's like an awkward elementary school student.
I'd say junior high. Give him the benefit of the doubt.
Be a little generous, yeah.
Yeah. Jack?
Yeah, so I think, speechwriters generally, they're not the ones who have the final approval over the speech in most cases. So we could certainly expect that not only President Trump will get at least one look at it before he has to read it from a teleprompter.
Well,
but
he's
also
already done that. We know that.
Right.
He apparently did a full-blown rehearsal.
Right, right. His schedule's clear today, so he's continuing to work on it, we would imagine. But also, General Kelly's probably looking over it as well. We can expect that John Kelly's probably got a hand in what's said here. But, we also know that traditionally presidents' administrations spend months on in some cases planning these things and writing these speeches. And then preparing them and winnowing down what's included, what's not included. But so far, there's no indication that they've spent that much time on it similar to prior administrations.
So if you want to hear your voice on the radio, this is a good time to do it. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I can tell you something. There are no other callers. So the first person who gets here, that person is on the air. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WMT comes from Curtis Lumber, featuring kitchen and bath showrooms with national designers Murillat, cabinets, Cambria quartz countertops, consultations available, curtislumber.com. Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement, a proud supporter of public radio, forthillautobody.com. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. imediaconsult.com. Wild Bird Junction, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, bird houses, heated bird baths, binoculars, jewelry, nature toys and games, and chimes, where people and nature come together. wildbirdjunction.com. And Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information.
And we are back with Professors Bruce Miroff of the Rockefeller College for Public Affairs and Policy and Professor Jack Collins of Siena College. We're waiting for your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now, what do you think will be in the speech? What do you think should be in the speech? What are you worried about? We'll go now to Cliff in Kingston. Cliff in Kingston, you're on.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm wondering how many times Trump is going to put his foot in his mouth.
What do you expect?
Well, I've watched many of the State of the Union addresses in the past, and when they said that the more Republicans are going to be watching, it could be a total cross-section. Republicans, Democrats, and everybody in between. But they're right when they say there's a lot more things to watch than Donald opening his mouth.
Gentlemen?
You know what I mean?
Yes, we know what you mean. Gentlemen, who's got some? Yeah, Jack?
I think that he's shown himself fully capable of reading from a teleprompter in the past. To the extent that he might go off the cuff, that's really where the opportunity to put his foot in the mouth is. But he's certainly able to read off that teleprompter, and this has been message tested and focus grouped by this point, presumably. So they're aware of what's in there and the ability for him to just get up there and read it. We've seen that in the past.
So my question to both of you would be, what if some Democrat, infuriated by what Trump has done, starts yelling at him from the audience? Then what happens?
Oh, Democrats are much more decorous than that.
I think the most part they are, but I do think that there are some Democrats who are just so infuriated with this guy and what he's done that they might do anything, including yell at him. And we know when people yell at this president, he yells back, or stand up and turn their backs to him or do something like that. Then the question is, when provoked, what will he do?
Well, Joe Wilson was famous for attacking Obama.
Yeah, right, sure.
During one of his State of the Union. So I think the Democrats that feel most passionately about Trump in Congress may well just show their distaste by not showing up.
Well, interesting, because I've asked a number of them on the Congressional Corner, and they expect to go. Mm-hmm. I think they consider it to be the potential for being rude outweighs their protest. So anyway, thank you, Cliff. Appreciate it. All right. And that brings us to Stephen in Saugerties. Okay, Stephen in Saugerties, you're on.
All right. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm just baffled by the fact that we're going to see a donor scroll during this. I'm speechless, quite frankly. Fill in the blanks, guys.
Okay, stay there, Stephen. So just in case a few people have missed this, let me explain. The Republicans are going to be putting this out over their own website. And when they do, they're going to be scrolling the names of their donors, of their major donors. Good idea or bad idea, guys?
I think it was only a matter of time until we saw this, right? This seems like the inevitable outcome of the current campaign finance environment, leveraging every possible opportunity as a fundraising opportunity. And, you know, certainly enough Republicans are out there who want to have their name scrolled on that screen. They'll give money. Republicans, you know, give them credit. They're really, really good at raising money.
I can tell you, every night I get a message, a personal message from Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Republicans, too, on the Internet. What do you think about this, Bruce?
I think it may be good for raising money, but it's so tacky. And I think for a president who is already seen as unable to separate money from civic duty in his own presidency, it sort of reinforces the message that this is a party of the donor class, for the donor class, and by the donor class, and Trump being the chief of that.
Now, you both, of course, have watched this guy and have watched what he has done, and tackiness doesn't seem to bother him with his base. He considers red meat going to the base to be the most important thing.
Well, Trump's always been tacky. I mean, the name on the hotels, this is much Donald Trump. You know, classical old wealth is discreet. It doesn't flash its wealth.
Like the Bushes.
Right. So this is part and parcel of who Donald Trump is. But again, I think to anybody outside his base, it doesn't send a message about someone whose deepest commitments and concerns are for the welfare of the whole people.
Now, Bruce, not to give you a hard time, but he is the president of the United States. Somehow, with all his tackiness, which both you and I see, he is a guy who has made it work for himself.
Well, it's worked in the sense that he won the office. Whether it works in the sense of being reelected, whether it works in the sense of maintaining congressional majorities for his party, whether it works in the long run for perceptions of what kind of president he was and where he goes down in the historical roster. We don't know the answer to those questions. Judged by what you yourself mentioned, his public approval so far, he's not doing too well.
Well, he's not doing too well. The question is, in those states where he did do well, is he going to continue to do well and pull the same effect when it's all over? In other words, Will he be able to hold on to Pennsylvania and these other states and Ohio and some of these other states which were so crucial to him? Now, you know, guys, when you look at his numbers among Republicans, they are huge. We're talking one of the reasons that these guys in the Senate are such cowards about being a profile in courage is they just don't want to have a primary from somebody who's going to wipe them out. They want their name on the their tombstone. He was a United States senator. That's, I think, where our big problem is now.
Yeah, and I think certainly enough of the states and districts in the House are so one-sided that they're not competitive at all at the general election phase. But a lot of these guys are more worried about the primary phase. And right now, it certainly seems that in some of these cases, the president's more popular than they are. So, you know, they really don't want to run the risk of being primaried by someone who supports the president.
Precisely. And, you know, this morning I said, I think the three of us are political scientists. We're interested in something called realigning elections. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be a wave? Is this going to be? And we have over 30 very prominent Republican congressmen who are getting out of the way of the wave, the tsunami that they think is coming. But it's not only the congressional seats that'll get waved over. It's going to be the state legislatures, too. And if the state legislatures, which have been responsible for doing all the gerrymandering, get democratized, for want of a better word, then you could really find a whole new scene in terms of what's going on in Congress. Bruce, you?
Yeah, also the governorships. The sure. Republicans have had a huge majority in governorships, and peculiarly in the American system, the great majority of gubernatorial elections happen in off-year rather than presidential year elections. And so if this is a wave year, not just the state legislatures, but the governors are up. Classically, realigning elections have to happen in presidential years. But often when there's been a realigning election, the immediately preceding congressional election shows where the directions are going. Yeah.
Yeah. Jack?
Yeah, I think, you know, you could certainly look back at some of the classic realigning elections. You know, 1896, 1932, you got some harbingers of those in the years before that with the 1894 and 1930 elections. And so it certainly is possible. You know, we saw, for instance, in 2017, the races that occurred in 2017, for instance, the Virginia House was a coin flip away from being a Democratic flip. So I think it's we're certainly on the path towards a wave election for Democrats, which may end up being a harbinger for that realigning election.
Indeed. And now we're going to go to Andy in Virginia. All right, Andy, you're on.
Hey, I'm sorry, guys. It's Virgins, Vermont.
Oh, sorry. It says Virgins, Virginia.
That's all right.
I just read what's in front of me.
I know. It's my bad accent. So, guys, I think he's going to spend most of the speech talking about what he's done because he really doesn't have a vision going forward. So he's, you know, he's going to talk about business, the employment numbers, the stock market, trade reform, tax reform, and how many judges he's got on the federal bench. And for the future, he seems to be instinctively conservative on issues and anti-women's choice and anti-science global warming. And on the global warming and women's choice, you know, I don't think he's going to talk too much about that on the speech. And you know, if we're going forward, he's going to talk about immigration, you know, the wall, military spending, and infrastructure.
Gentlemen?
Yeah, I think he's certainly going to play to the things that will get him the standing ovations from Republicans in the room. And, you know, if anyone thinks that he's not going to go on Twitter right afterwards with a count of the number of standing ovations he got, you're kidding yourself. And so I think he's going to do whatever he can to get those at this point. He'll talk about the things that he has accomplished, you know, the cutting of regulations, which he and other Republicans think makes for a more conducive business environment, the trade and tax reform in particular as well, the efforts made on Obamacare repealing over the last few months, where he's tacked on things onto other legislation to try to pick away at Obamacare. But, you know, maybe
you know,
also
I
looking
forward a
little
bit. I have a
point
to say about that, though. I don't really think that's him. I think that's the guys in Congress, because I don't think he even has the vision to figure that stuff out. I mean, I hate to be so anti-president, but it's more like he's a vehicle for the Congress than he's a leader, and that he'll sign anything that they put in front of him so that he can call it a win.
Bruce?
certainly Trump is not a details guy. Let's just put it that way. I think the immigration infrastructure will be two key issues, but they cut in different ways. Infrastructure on its surface looks like a bipartisan issue. When you get down to the details, Trump and the Democrats have a very different conception of how to do infrastructure. The Democrats want public money. Trump somehow believes the states and cities will cough up hundreds of billions of dollars by raising their taxes. So,
or even the privates. I mean, even Andrew Cuomo, another guy like that, is talking about a gigantic tunnel under the Long Island Sound, and he's saying he'll get the private industry to pay for
tax incentives, That's been Trump's mantra.
There's a flaw in the whole infrastructure idea. That most of the infrastructure repair the United States needs is repair. That is, we need to repair bridges, we need to repair roads. And you can't turn those into public-private partnerships, because if the privates are involved, there have to be tolls, right? And the public would go berserk if you sort of said a road that's been free is now a toll road just because some private company fixed it when the public laid out all the money in the first place.
Good point.
So I'm very skeptical about, the amount of federal money Trump's talking about putting up is pretty small. You're talking about $20 to $30 billion dollars a year over 10 years. That's not a lot for infrastructure for a big country, the federal side. Immigration is the tough one because that's the divisive issue. That's the immediate issue.
And you can't trust the guy because no matter what he says, he turns around and does something else.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, Andy, thank you. All right. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Rick in Leeds. Okay. What do you got, Rick?
Oh, hi. This is Richard in Cairo, but it's actually also Rick in Leeds, so maybe that is me.
Somebody gave him the wrong information. Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to comment, and I won't be watching tonight because, you reach a saturation point, and I listen to you guys most every morning, and it's wonderful. Although, I mean, I'll be honest, it's very stressful. I often equate it to Game of Thrones, except it's real. And as far as this guy being president, I mean, I don't even look at him as a halfway decent human being. And I have a hard time with looking at somebody like that as my president, if he's a racist, a sexual predator, all the things that he's made very obvious, the things, you know, cutting regulations, all those things that protect workers, the environment, all the things that we've fought for hundreds of years, they just give it away in 5 minutes. The climate issues, probably the most important issues ever to face humanity, and these people it's really astounding.
Okay, wait. So you're not gonna watch it. This is something that Bruce sort of said to us in the beginning of the show, that the Republicans watch and that the Democrats, and Jack said it also, and that the Democrats don't. What do you lose, Bruce, by not watching if you're somebody who hates Trump's guts?
I don't think you really lose anything. There are so many ways to get content today. You can watch the entire speech on YouTube the next day. You can read accounts on the media for free or,
Not to interrupt, but I am on 24/7. And unfortunately, I wake up with my iPad and I go to sleep with it. So it's not like I'm not paying attention. I've been paying attention to the United States for the last 50 years. And so I have a whole different impression about stuff. To me, most of this political stuff is theater. I haven't seen the Democrats do much worthy work as well. And I don't consider myself a Democrat in any way. I'm more of a world citizen. I like to look at myself as being a nice human being. And when I look at how many military bases...
Hey, Rick. Let's remember we got a panel here. Let me go to Jack. Let me go to Jack. Jack.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting time to be paying attention to, what Rick's calling the political theater, because the State of the Union is nothing but political theater for most of it. You've got this massive pageantry of a president who's called in by the sergeant at arms and, walks down the aisle shaking the hands of members of Congress who treat it like they're meeting the king. And then the president goes up and he delivers this speech to largely, typically, a fawning audience. And then, he steps down from the dais and He goes about his daily life after that, and it's really an exercise in political theater. So to your question, Alan, about whether or not you lose anything by not tuning in, I'm with Bruce on this one. I don't think you lose much by not tuning in. It's largely political theater. But that said, if you want to stay engaged with what the talking points are that are coming at you from either side, I think it's important to at least read the speech if you're not gonna watch it.
Hey, if you're gonna be on at 7:45 the next morning, you better watch the speech.
I'll watch Fox's version too, just to get the other universe.
One of the things that just got mentioned, which I find fascinating, is when they come in this great pomp and respect for the presidency. Mm-hmm. So everybody stands up and everybody applauds, whether you think this guy is the worst ever, and I do. Can we expect, because this is such an extraordinary president in terms of alienation of so many people, that people will not applaud when he comes in?
I think they'll applaud when he comes in. That doesn't mean they'll applaud his speech. And one of the theatrical elements of the State of the Union with partisan polarization is one half of the room is cheering and the other half is sitting there looking glum. So there will be very few cheers from the Democratic side. The Republicans, having a majority, have a few more people. So there'll be a few more cheers than frowns.
So when he talks about infrastructure, which he will, which we all know, will the Democrats, who believe mightily in infrastructure, sort of applaud, at least in the beginning when he first mentions infrastructure? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think infrastructure has become this sort of valence issue where everyone agrees on the goal of fixing our infrastructure. So when he talks about this idea that our infrastructure needs fixing, he might get a smattering of applause throughout the Democratic side. Republicans, maybe even some of them, are against investing in infrastructure as well. So that might be an issue where he gets kind of far less applause than you would think, given that it's supposed to be this bipartisan issue.
Be interesting to watch the 30 guys who are leaving the House of Representatives to see what their level of applause is. Rick, thank you very much for your very good call. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Laurie in Albany. Laurie, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, good. I was calling more, not so much political thoughts or questions, but more about people in, you know, so up in arms about the things that Trump says that make them so angry and hate him. I really, really believe that Trump has Asperger's, and I think we've nominated a president with Asperger's. And I think that, you know, when he says these things, I don't think he even has control over it at some point. And I wonder if people have ever given that a thought, that, you know, it's like if someone had a stroke and they couldn't talk very well. So I just wonder what other people thought about that, with the narcissism and the inability to control his, you know, what he says and things of that sort.
Well, let me just start by saying I think he did get himself elected with all of those things as president of the United States. I think he has a sort of bean-spirited cunning. That's my bet. But a lot of people have been diagnosing this guy, and there's a big debate as to whether that's appropriate or not, especially if you're a mental health professional. Jack, you had something to say?
Yeah, you know, I'm certainly not a mental health professional, but I think it, you know, what may seem to you, Laurie, like Asperger's, I think to a lot of other people, it looks like he's sort of grown up without any real consequences of his actions or what he says. You know, he's never really had to face real consequences for saying mean-spirited things or for going off the cuff. And so as a result, you know, he looks like someone who doesn't seem to care about what others think of him.
Bruce?
to me, the most revealing thing I've read about Trump in terms of psychology was from Tony Schwartz, who was the ghostwriter on The Art of the Deal. He said that Trump was kind of like a 9-year-old with ADHD. And clearly Trump's inability to focus, to read memos, and one of the things that also distinguishes him from past presidents is, how do you have a rational decision-making process when the president of the United States doesn't pay attention to information and can't keep his focus on a question for more than 2 or 3 minutes.
Thank you for that. Okay, Laurie, thank you. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting Pine Bush Perspectives, a juried photo exhibit featuring photographs of the natural environment taken by visitors, albanypinebush.org. The Poughkeepsie Public Library District, hosting Angie Thomas, author of the acclaimed book The Hate U Give, on February 5th, poklib.org for more information. Windhorse Naturopathic Clinic, Brattleboro, Vermont, offering naturopathic medicine, oxidative medicine, colon hydrotherapy, and acupuncture, specializing in Lyme disease, now accepting new primary care patients, windhorsenaturopathic.com. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products and gifts, waterwheelvillage.com. And Cindy McMahon Hunt Real Estate, ERA, selling homes throughout the Capital Region since 2003, offering pre-listing preparation, professional photography, and staging services. GetCindySold.com.
We are delighted to be here with Professors Bruce Miroff of the Rockefeller College for Public Affairs and Policy and Professor Jack Collins of Siena College. And we are talking about what to expect, what we think is going to happen. We've heard from Stephen, who writes, "Hi all, Stephen Pittsfield here. How do you think the president will respond if the ratings come back and show an all-time low for viewership? Thanks and love the program." Very interesting question, right? I mean, you know, it could well happen. It could well happen because I think both of our expert guests have posited that people don't want to watch what they don't like, and there are an awful lot of Democrats in this country.
Well, it's like the inauguration crowd, right? He could certainly just disregard the facts or come up with his own alternative facts. And they could certainly argue, too, that, you know, more people are watching on social media. And that's why the TV numbers aren't great, because, you know, he's so popular on social media that that's where the audience is coming in.
Well, they will argue anything that they want to argue, and they will continue to do that, as they have done all along. So let's go back to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Dory in Schenectady. Hi, Dory.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question as to whether or not anybody thought that he was going to mention versus domestic and foreign issues, the wall, that sort of thing, whether he was going to make any play towards parity, a balance of what money they were trying to spend where. And then just a quick observation that I believe that Lori from Albany probably has a good soul, because she's trying to find a reason other than the fact that I think Trump just has a very small soul.
Gentlemen, who wants to go first?
Well, I think in the past, presidents have largely stuck with whatever seems to be best for them at that time. You know, in 2002, not surprisingly, President Bush spent the vast majority of the time on the war on terror, the burgeoning war on terror. And so, you know, this year, I think Trump is certainly going to try to play towards the strengths with the economy that he's been talking about, although, as Bruce mentioned earlier, maybe not the best day for that. You know, he'll continue to talk about things like tax reform, and he might even give a brief nod to the Dreamers, continuing with his recent rhetoric. But overall, I wouldn't expect a balance between domestic and foreign. I think we're focused much more on domestic.
And you want to keep your eye on the guests that they have. You know, they always bring in various people who will make their point, introduce them, you know, from wherever
I
they
think
are.
For Democrats, they should watch. For independents, for people who just can't stand them, because that old premise of know thine enemy is a good premise. Mm. And when you only take your news from one source, you're living in that bubble that former President Obama spoke so much about.
Bruce?
one of the paradoxes I mentioned earlier was whether Trump sticks to issues that have some bipartisan ring to them, or whether he touches on issues that are central to his agenda but alienate Democrats. One of the things he will be tempted to do, and remember his chief speechwriter is Stephen Miller, who's a hardliner.
I was going to mention that. Very important.
Is to beat up the Democrats because they don't want to spend money on the military. But that doesn't sound very bipartisan if you're beating up the Democrats on the military. So, but that's something that a lot of Republicans in Congress want to hear, and a lot of Republicans in the base want to hear, that he is taking a tough line and pushing the Democrats on why won't you, and using the patriotism card to talk about the Democrats' reluctance to spend on the military compared to social needs.
That's always worked for the Republicans, hasn't it?
It did, although the Iraq War kind of took a little bit out of their kit bag, yeah. It's harder to talk about being a great foreign policy party when you've presided over a disaster.
Dory, thanks for the great call. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. Lots of room for all of you. 1-800-348-2551. And we'll go on over to Jeff in northern New Jersey. Okay, Jeff, you're on.
Hello. Number one, I want to thank you for taking my call. And full disclosure, I am a Trump supporter.
Great.
Now, I heard what you were talking about. Thank you. I heard what you were talking about when you talked about a change election. Now, if there is going to be a change election, there's a couple things I believe, in my humble opinion. Number one, it will take place in the House. Number two, if it is a change election, then the Democrats are going to have to put up as candidates that tend to move more towards the center, because you're not going to get the independents and the conservative Democrats with very liberal candidates in order to change the House. What do you think about that?
Gentlemen.
So I think this is definitely in line to be a year where Democrats are competitive to take back the House, but they might struggle a bit in the Senate because of the nature of the Senate map this year. Democrats are defending far too many seats in red states, and there's only two opportunities really for pickups from Republicans in Nevada and Arizona. And so the nature of this year's election is such that if they do take back one of the two chambers of Congress, it'll be the House. That said, whether or not they gain any value from moving to the center with their candidates is, I think, a less secure proposition to me. largely because the nature of most of these House seats where they're going to be competitive, you know, it's not so much that you need to win independent and even maybe the occasional moderate Republican. It's that you need to energize Democrats to show up and vote in these midterm elections.
And Jack, all the polling that we're seeing says they may not be that far ahead right now, the Democrats, in terms of people who want Democrats versus Republicans, but they're way ahead in terms of the energy factor of who's going to come out and vote.
Right, absolutely. And so I think finding somebody who can energize that base is often the key. Now, that said, of course, in a couple of these districts where if Democrats do want to take back the House with a decent number, they need to run somebody who can win a purple or even moderately red district that they would never have won.
Those
in the
are
past
the winners
years.
So far. Look in Alabama.
You're floating in and out. I don't know what that is, but if you could keep the mouthpiece in one spot, I think that would be helpful. Go ahead.
Okay, now look at the senatorial race the Democrats just picked up. He is a more conservative Democrat. He is not
a blue dog
left liberal.
Yeah.
And that is a harbinger of things to come in the Democratic Party.
Well, let's put it this way. He won not only because of him, but he won because of his opponent, who was terrible.
True. Very true. I agree on that
now
one.
Now in North in northern New Jersey, where you're calling from, and I'm delighted you're calling, really. And I'm delighted you're a Trump supporter, because we need more of that, not less of it here, in terms of listening. But I do wonder what you think of people like Frelinghuysen and others retiring right now. What do you think that portends?
It says that they don't want there's a wave. I don't unnecessarily. There's a sense of change in the air. There is something going on, but I don't think the Democrats should get too confident, because Trump is an example of what's going on. He did not bring this on. So people have to, if you're putting your ear to the ground, pay attention to the unrest across the board, liberals, conservatives. There is a great deal of unrest.
Yep.
So that's why these guys are backing down. They don't want to fight. They have to fight now in order to get their jobs, and they don't want to. That's why Flake, right? He's not a fighter. He's a nice guy, but he's not a fighter.
But he also sees the
polls.
That's my opinion. He also sees the polls, which are not good for him if he takes somebody on. Bruce, you wanted to say something?
I think the caller may be giving too much weight to ideology. I mean, congressional elections vary greatly depending on the constituencies. And I suspect, for example, there's a lot of publicity about a lot more women candidates this time.
Yep.
Candidates with military backgrounds on the Democratic side. And in many ways, when you have a longtime incumbent in a swing district and a new fresh face in what may be a wave election, then ideology may not be the be-all and end-all about who can unseat an incumbent, particularly if there are a lot of these are districts where Hillary either won in 16 or came very close. They're not deep red districts that we're talking about where the Democrats' chances lie.
Okay, Jack?
Yeah, so if you look back at 2010, I think the same issues that are being brought up now on the Democratic side were brought up on the Republican side, the idea that Republicans were moving too far to the right, right? People thought that the elections of 06 and 08 meant that Republicans had gone a little too far, that they should maybe backtrack a little bit towards the center. But they end up running a lot of deeply conservative candidates, and, you know, they win 63 seats in the House and take back the House, which, you know, 2 years earlier, no one thought was even possible.
Yes.
We were talking about whether the Republican was being, confined to a regional party.
Okay, Jeff, last up, because we got a lot of people behind you. Go ahead.
One more thing, that if there is going to be a wave election, what I think you'll see are a lot of the incumbent Democrats being primaried, because you got to go out with the old to bring in the new.
Okay, thanks for that. Appreciate it very much. Good call, Jeff. We appreciate it. All right, let's now go to Kerry in Bennington. All right, Kerry in Bennington, you're on. Hi, Kerry in Bennington. Are you there? I say, Kerry, did you step out? All right, Kerry lost his chance in line. I'm going to count to three. One, Kerry. Two, Kerry. Two and a half. Three, you're out. Okay, Kerry's out. And now we'll go to Bonnie in Cheshire. All right, Bonnie and Cheshire, you're up.
Oh, I have a suggestion that tonight when Trump comes on stage, I suggest that all the people that he's offended, instead of applauding him, they take a knee like they do in football.
Cool. Cool. There may be somebody there who'll do that. I mean, you certainly have people who
I'd love to see
that.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be interesting. Or stand up and turn around. It's been done.
That's all.
Yeah. Hey, Bonnie, thanks an awful lot. Appreciate your call. Right. Bye. Okay, we'll go to Brian in New Paltz. Okay, Brian in New Paltz, you're on.
Hello, Alan and guests. Thank you for taking the call. I guess I was struck by some of the ironies and some of the omissions in the list of people who are going to be in the box with the First Lady. There are none of the heroes who helped victims of the mass shootings that took place during the year, including the attacks on the congresspeople on the baseball field. These are glaring omissions. And the irony that so many of the heroes that are being recognized are people who were involved in events which, by all indications, are caused by climate change. So that's just an observation. And I guess I'm wondering, for a question, who picks these people to sit in the box? Do you think Trump is picking these people, or are his handlers picking these folks?
I don't know who picks them. Obviously, it's discussed. I think the provocative choice is parents of children who were killed allegedly by MS-13, that is Salvadorian gang members. When immigration
and the omission of the mother of the woman who was killed in Charlottesville.
Right. Given that immigration is the hottest issue right now and the most immediately pressing issue, it's pretty provocative to sort of harp on the idea that you're going to connect immigrants from Central America to the worst gang. And that sounds like Trump's initial announcement for president, Mexicans are rapists. It's in that mode.
Yeah.
And that's why that's, to me, a kind of surprisingly provocative gesture.
You know anything, Jack?
Yeah. The Democrats are responding in kind on immigration. A handful of Democrats have announced that they're going to be bringing with them some dreamers, some Haitian immigrants from the infamous countries which Trump referenced with the S-holes, or S-house. We don't really know, right?
Big debate.
But so it seems that that's the debate, right? On one side, you've got in the First Lady's box the victims of the MS-13, and then on the floor, Democrats are bringing in dreamers. So it certainly illustrates the divide.
Thank you very much, Brian. We'll go to Jim in Cohoes. Jim, we're running out of time, so make it fast. Go ahead.
It's going to be a quick one. Trump always expects the people to just give and give. Why doesn't Trump give up two or three residents that we have to maintain and keep security at, and then think about funding the wall?
Anybody want to respond? Okay, I think you made your point. Thank you very much. All right, we'll go now to Mike in Hartford, Connecticut. Mike, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I'm a lifelong Republican and a conservative evangelical Christian, but I think that Trump is an embarrassment, and I'd like to see the Republicans and maybe even the Democrats not clap for him and potentially even boo him if he says something particularly ridiculous during the State of the Union. I don't think there should be any clapping for this president.
So, Mike, we're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you, as a self-announced evangelical, how you talk about the evangelicals, how we can understand the evangelicals who stick with this guy no matter what, including Stormy Daniels and everybody else. What do you make of that?
I think it's getting to a boiling point where they're going to start to turn on him. At least I hope that's the case. Any reasonable person would see that this person knows nothing about the truth, and he speaks nothing but lies.
But how about evangelicals?
So I did not vote for him.
Yeah, but what about evangelicals who say, give him a mulligan, a do-over on a little space on some of these things, like the porno star?
I was so disappointed with the people that said that, and I think it's the height of hypocrisy.
Okay, man, thank you for calling. We apologize to Anna from Plainfield, who was left on the line. And I want to thank our friends Bruce Miroff of the Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy and Jack Collins, professors both of Siena College, for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine Exams, Eye Care, Dry Eye Therapy, and now New American-Made Frames, where eyewear is an art, VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Pardon me, Studio KTM Salon, Red Hook, specializing in all phases of cut and organic color, from corrective to fashion, by stylist Kristen Marquette, StudioKTM.com, Dola Pizzeria Napolitana, traditional Napolitan style pizza in 900-degree wood-fired oven, downtown Great Barrington, open 6 days and seven nights, DolaPizza.com. And Patricia Dalton Fennell, bridging the arts, sciences, and services, spotlighting colleagues, Dr. Paul Glavinsky, author and sleep specialist, conducting scleroderma research with Lee Shapiro, MD, AlbanyHealthManagement.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. I really enjoyed today's show. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to the wonderful Susie Chekai for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. And it's time, I have a second to tell you, the lockbox is still open. We're getting very close to where we need to go. Anybody who enjoys the show, this would be a good time to show it and go to 1-800-323-9262 or go to WAMC.org. So long, everybody. Till the next time.